All right, welcome back to part two of the review session for the Wills midterm. This portion of the review is going to be focusing on a Wills analytical framework. If the problem does not already tell you that the will is valid, your first step of the analysis is to go through the elements of a valid will, starting with first, legal capacity. Did the testator have legal capacity, meaning 18 years old, married or have been married, or on active duty with the U.S. military? Realizing that in the vast majority of states, being 18 is the only way to have legal capacity to execute a will. And remember, it is age-based and those two status-based. Having disabilities of minority removed is not enough. The next thing we do is we look at testamentary capacity. There are five main elements of testamentary capacity. You must understand what you're doing. Oh, making a will. You have to understand the effect of what you're doing. Oh, I'm going to dispose of property when I die. You have to know the general nature and extent of your property. Doesn't have to be very exact or all, just the general idea. You have to know the natural objects of your bounty. Basically, that means you know who your heirs would be were you to die intestate. And then you have to be able to do those four things all at the same time when you make your will. The third requirement is... very sensitive. Oh, testamentary intent. You must intend that the very instrument you execute to be your will, not a letter of instructions, not something that's being done as part of a ceremony, etc. Then, the formalities. Knowing that there are different formalities based upon the different types of wills. First, we have the attested will. That is a will that is in writing. It is signed by the testator or a proxy, meaning in the testator's presence and by the testator's direction. It must have two witnesses. Their age requirement, though, is only above 14. They have to be competent. Publication is not required, meaning they do not have to know they are witnessing a will. Yeah, they should. And they have to for the self-proving affidavit. But for the validity of the will itself, they do not have to know that what they're witnessing is a will. They must attest in the testator's conscious presence. Remembering, the witnesses do not need to attest in each other's presence, and the testator does not need to sign in the witness's presence. Of the three presence requirements, Texas only has one. Other states have two and maybe three presence requirements. We are pretty low. It's only that the witnesses attest in the testator's conscious presence. And then you know that if a beneficiary serves as a witness, it is possible that the beneficiary will lose all or part of the gift. The second type of will that Texas recognizes is the holographic will. And a holographic will is one that is wholly in the testator's own handwriting. There are different approaches in the United States with regard to what it means to be wholly or significantly enough in the testator's own handwriting. We have the intent approach, the surplusage approach, and the strict approach. We have, the intent approach. We have the medium approach, which is the surplusage view, which basically means this. If we can disregard the non-holographic material and the property disposition is the same, then we can allow non-holographic material to be in there. But if it impacts the disposition, like if you had a fill-in-the-blank form and you just filled in names of people and amounts and stuff, that would not work. Some states it will, but not here. We follow the surplusage approach. Of course, it still has to be signed by the testator. Still must be signed by the testator. But we dispense with the requirement of witnesses. That's in about half the states. Half the states still require witnesses for holographic wills. We don't. If by chance you have a holographic will that's witnessed, it meets the requirements of both. And at the time of probate, you can decide which way you want to go based upon which one is easier. If you ascertain that the will is valid, or if the problem already told you the will is valid, the next thing to do is to see if it can be contested. You can contest on the fact that it doesn't meet the requirements we've already looked at, that there's an insane delusion or a hallucination of some sort, that there's undue influence or duress or fraud. If we go through and we find that the will is successfully contested, despite being valid at the time of, despite being valid with our initial analysis, then of course the property is going to go by intestacy. So if the will is invalid, then we would have to do an intestate distribution, going back to the beginning of our first review, our today, and using the intestacy framework. However, if you decide that the will is valid and is not successfully contested, the next thing to do is to see if it has been revoked, either partially or totally. There are three main ways a will can be revoked. First, by operation of law, where regardless of what the testator said in the will, the law will automatically revoke all or part of the will, based upon a premise that that's what the testator would have wanted if the testator had thought about it. So we have divorce, that if you write a will while you're married, you leave stuff to your spouse or to your spouse's relations that are not also your relatives, then those are revoked upon divorce. Pretermitted children, under certain circumstances, will be entitled to a forced share. Because that's such a common issue, we're going to go through a series of pretermitted children questions at the end of our wills analytical framework review. Then if the beneficiary predeceases, if the beneficiary either biologically or legally, like through a disclaimer, not surviving the 120 hours, etc., is deemed to have died first, then we have a lapse unless it is saved by the anti-lapse statute for gifts to people, or cypre for gifts to a charity. And then it could be revoked partially because the property is not in the estate itself, which we call ademption. We can then have revocation by physical act. And although jurisdictions in the United States are divided as whether we can revoke partially or totally by physical act, we have learned that in Texas it is all or nothing. So you can only revoke the entire will by physical act. Under our law, there is no partial revocation by physical act. The third way of revoking a will is by subsequent writing, and that revocation may be total or partial. Some people on the exam will write something like, Texas does not recognize partial revocation by, does not recognize partial revocation of a will. That's true for physical act, but not true for a writing. A writing can revoke partially. Now, once you've determined whether or not the will has been revoked, we now kind of assume for our analysis that you haven't. Remember, if you've determined that the will was revoked, that means you might be back either to intestacy or to a prior, now unrevoked will. But if you determine the will hasn't been revoked, now you've got to search the facts for all the other types of issues that might be therein lurking. So let's take a look at the types of situations you want to look for. In other words, spot issues. That's the biggest thing people will miss. So here are the issues you'd want to look for. Ademption of specific gifts. The specific gift is not there. The satisfaction of a gift. Remembering now, though, that satisfaction has to be in writing because there are analogous rules to the advancement rules we learned earlier. Effect of change in value. You get the item, but sometimes there may be a stock split, a stock dividend or something that you'll need to analyze. Interest on pecuniary gifts, interest starts to run 1 year from date of death. So if distribution of your gift of money is delayed more than a year, you're now entitled to interest at the judgment rate starting 1 year from date of death. Exoneration, what if an item given is subject to a debt? A mortgage, a deed of trust, an Article 9 security interest. What does the beneficiary receive? We learned that starting in 2005, exoneration is no longer presumed. It used to be if the will was written. Remember, that's one of those rare dates you have to remember because it's based on date of will execution, not date of death. So if the will's before that, before September 1 of 05, then exoneration is presumed and the debt's paid off. But if the will is written nowadays, there is no exoneration and the beneficiary only receives the equity in the item. Continuing with issues to look for. You'll want to look for... There we go. You want to look for integration issues. External and internal. Look, listen, I hold it. One slide went by too fast. Come on. Come on. Back there. That's better. Abatement. What if there's not enough property to pay all the gifts? Which ones do you sell to pay creditors first? And we learned that the strongest gift of all is a specific gift of real property, and the weakest would be the personal property in the residual clause or intestacy property if you were partially intestate. We learned about apportionment, that unlike all the other debts, estate taxes are apportioned, meaning every beneficiary pays his or her fair share of the estate tax, rather than it being paid in the normal abatement order. We learned about divorce, that the ex-spouse and the other ex-relatives, like an ex-mother-in-law or ex-son-in-law, would lose their gift. Pre-termitted children, children born or adopted after will execution. Like I said, we'll have some sample problems for that momentarily. What if there is lapse, beneficiary dies first, or if it's a charity, the charitable organization does not exist or the charitable purpose has been satisfied? So then we looked at the anti-lapse statute, how it applies, and I pray the equitable doctrine of equitable approximation. We looked at ambiguities. We know that for latent and patent ambiguities, we can introduce extrinsic evidence to fix them, to figure out what the testator intended, other than filling in like a blank space. But jurisdictions are divided with regard to what you can do if there is no apparent ambiguity. Can you bring in extrinsic evidence to create an ambiguity where there is none on the face of the instrument? Texas follows the plain meaning or clear meaning or single legal meaning rule, meaning that you cannot. You cannot bring in extrinsic evidence to disturb the clear meaning of the will. The next group of issues we want to look at, integration, external and internal integration. External integration, piecing together different documents as the will, wills and codicils. Internal integration, making sure that all the pages that you signed on the date of will execution are the same as the pages that are there on date of probate. Incorporation by reference, whether or not you can incorporate an extraneous document into the will by reference, or whether it can stand as a fact of independent significance, something apart from disposing of property at death, thereby not needing the formalities of a will. Precatory language, and how that is unlikely to be given any binding effect. Class gifts, like a gift to children. Conditions, whether the entire will is conditional or a specific gift. Interesting, just last night I was reading a conditional gift case from another state. What they were doing was really cool. These people were in a car. They already had their estate plan. And they were married to each other, but there were some stepkids. And he had written his estate plan before, leaving everything to his biological kiddies. And on the way to the airport to go on a trip to Phoenix, Arizona, he took out a pen and he wrote, he said, "If you're reading this, that means I died on the trip to Phoenix or on the way back. And now I want to include all my stepchildren in the will and trust, and along with my biological kids." And then he put it in an envelope and shoved it in the glove compartment of the car. Well, he survived the trip. He survived just fine. Then he died later on. And the question is whether that amendment was conditioned on him dying on the trip, or whether he was just writing why he was doing it now and it was an inducement. Which way do you think the court went? Inducement or condition? Inducement, they said. Yeah, they said that was not... He just said that... He never said, this is effective only if I die on the trip. He just said, if you're reading this, that means I have died on the trip. Anyways, you could argue both ways. But anyways, that's what that particular court held, which would be consistent with the preference for naming things like that, or holding that things like that are inducements rather than true conditions. Combination wills, we looked at the joint will, one testamentary instrument, will of more than one person, you know never to do that. Reciprocal wills, wills with parallel dispositive provisions, and then the contractual will, knowing that to prove a contractual will, the will must state the terms of the indicated contract exists and state the terms of the contract, or you need a separate written agreement that would satisfy all the elements of a contract apart from the will. And finally, we looked at election wills, where a will attempts to give away property belonging to a beneficiary. And the beneficiary must either accept that and agree for the will to dispose of the beneficiary's property to receive the property in the will, or elects against the will and keeps the beneficiary's own property but does not get to take under the will. So that is our brief analytical framework for a will. What we're going to do now is work through some pretermitted error problems as well as go over the answer to a essay question. So let's start first with our pretermitted error problems. The first four of these are based on the same scenario. A very simple situation where the testator is married to the surviving spouse and they have two children, A, who was born when the will was written, and PC, for pretermitted child, who was born or adopted after will execution. Now, in our first scenario, the will leaves everything to child A. That's what he did in his will, figuring that the surviving spouse would be plenty happy with his or her half of the community. So, what will happen in that situation if the will leaves the entire estate to the one child? Anybody care to give a guess? I would rather not say that. Would anybody care to give us the appropriate answer? Hold it. Go ahead. Go for it. That is the correct answer. It's only a C, though, because there was no analysis. So your answer is 100% right. Now, if it was an S, if it was an objective question, that's all you write down and forget it. If it's an essay, tell me how you'd explain that.
Well, you wouldn't see how much is left to one of the children, and how many children beneficiaries there are, the number of pretermitted children. Then you add them and divide how much is given between them.
Did everybody understand that? Because that's absolutely right. What you do is you look at the property left to children. In this situation, it was the entire estate left to a child. Then we take the number of children beneficiaries, one, add the number of pretermitted children, which is another one, that's two, and we divide the two into that amount, which is the entire estate, which would then give the pretermitted child half, and A's share now is reduced by half, meaning A only gets a half. Nicely done. Anybody have any questions? In our second scenario, the will instead leaves everything to the surviving spouse. In that situation, what will the pretermitted child get?
Nothing.
Why?
Because the other parent is also there, the child's parent.
Right. Because the surviving spouse who is getting the entire estate is also the pretermitted child's other parent, the surviving spouse will still take all. A pretermitted child cannot take something away from the pretermitted child's other parent, who is also the surviving spouse of the deceased. So in that situation, yes, PC is a pretermitted child. So your answer would be, PC is pretermitted. He was born or adopted after will execution. But because the entire estate was left to the surviving spouse, who was also PC's other parent, PC is entitled to nothing. And of course, the public policy behind that is clear. Since that's the other parent, that parent will take care of that person when he or she dies. Any questions on scenario two? Moving on then to scenario number three. The will leaves everything to a charity. Doesn't leave anything to any family members. All to charity. What happens then? Anybody care to volunteer? Sure, go for it.
I'm going to say PC gets it all. PC gets that.
Yes! Excellent recovery. Can you now tell me why you decided to change your answer, other than the fact that I gave you an unhappy look. Yeah. Margaret always tells me that I'm kind of like cellophane. I'm not good at disguising what I'm thinking, which isn't always a good... So, poker, not happening. All right. Who did number one? Where's our number one? Yeah. Is there any difference in... Is it sort of similar? Now, think about what we do in this situation. We look at the amount not passing to the pre-termitted child's other parent, which is how much of the estate? All of it. Now we give them a share as if the parent died intestate. What would the share be if the parent died intestate without a surviving spouse? It would only be half because there's two kids. Now, if there was only the pre-termitted child in our fact pattern, then the pre-termitted child would get all, and charity would get nothing. But because there was a child there, pre-termitted's intestate share would only have been half. So he's not going to get a better deal than intestacy would have given him. Can't get a better deal than intestacy. So that's why pre-termitted child gets half, and the charity still gets half. Now, if there had been three children, what would pre-termitted child get? If it was A, B, and pre-termitted.
It would be a third. See, I thought
right.
if the kids weren't mentioned in the will, they pretended like they didn't exist. Where am I getting that from?
If the kids aren't mentioned in the will, pretend they didn't exist. You're using the formula for when property is left to at least one child.
Okay.
But in this case, no property is left to a child. So instead of looking at the property left to children to divide, we look to property not left to the pre-termitted child's other parent.
Okay.
That's the differential. What property do you start looking at? If something is left to a child, you look at the amount left to all the children together and then divide that up, as we did in the first question. But if we have a situation where nothing is left to kids, then we look to how much is not left to the pre-termitted child's other parent. Here, everything is not left to SS. And therefore, we use 100% divided by 2 to give the intestate share of half. Okay? Question. Yes, ma'am.
What if pre-termitted child deceased and left with heirs? Do the heirs divide the...
Yes. They would just take. Anything else? Yes.
And our child, do we use the pre-permitted scheme as well for distribution?
The question was, what if we have an art child? Yes, if that art child is born after execution of the will, that child would fit in, assuming we can establish the paternity, etc., that we need to. So yes, there would be no difference there. Still born or adopted afterwards. Anything else? Let's move on then to our fourth scenario, still using these facts. What if the will left $20,000 to child A and the rest of the estate to somebody we call X? Then what do we do? Anybody? Yes, go ahead.
So the pre-termitted child would get half of the other child's, so it would be $10,000, but they cannot get money from another beneficiary. They can only take from other children.
Correct. When property, excellently stated, that would give full credit for that. If property is left to a child, the pre-termitted child can only take from that child. So we look at the amount left to the children, which is $10,000. There is one child beneficiary, one pre-termitted child. That's two. We take $20,000 divided by two, and that gives us the $10,000 that A gets, and the pre-termitted child gets 10, and the other beneficiaries, I said X gets the rest. It wouldn't matter who they were, as long as they're not kids. They're other people, and we cannot touch the shares of other people for the pre-termitted child. Yes?
What's the difference between that and charity? Charity's another beneficiary.
Right.
So why can we take half from the charity if we can't take half from X?
Because the statute says that that's what you do. I'm sorry. That one there, the formula in the statute is if something is left to a child, we can only use the portion left to that child to distribute. But if it's left to If nothing is left to a child, then we use all of the estate not left to the pre-termitted child's other parent.
So if the entire estate was left to X, we would take half of X share in that scenario?
Yes.
If nothing was left to A.
Correct. Okay. That's correct. Anything else? Now we come to a more sophisticated scenario. Harder than anything you'll see on the exam. So that if you can work through this scenario, you know you're in good shape. Here we have husband and wife, and they have three children, A, B, and C. Husband then strays from his marital vows, finds himself a concubine, and as a result, they have pre-termitted child. And then he writes a will. Well, he wrote a will first before he had the pre-termitted child. And in his will, he said the following. He said that $75,000 was going to go to his wife, $25,000 was going to go to his brother, and he left nothing to A, B, and C. And just to keep our fact pattern easy, we're going to say that how much money we have to distribute, we got $100,000. So in our little hypothetical, we could actually pay exactly what the will says, and we have no extra money for a residual clause. Just to make it easy. And the question is, how much now does the pre-termitted child receive? Anybody want to go through this step by step and demonstrate their prowess as a pre-termitted child person? Anybody else? You've done a lot of talking. I'm willing. I know, but if no one else volunteers, I'm going to let you do it. Look, you're seeking redemption for that one day still?
Yeah.
All right. Look, if you can do this one, you've done, it's marvelous.
Well, the law is if the husband dies before September 1st, 2011, then...
Actually, the change in the law would not impact this fact pattern.
Oh, then you might want to move to someone else.
There are fact patterns where it would make a big difference. Well, but in this fact pattern, because we're not going to deprive the surviving spouse of more than half her gift, that's why it doesn't make any difference. This one would come out the same at any time.
The way I did it was I figured that the pre-terminated child was entitled to half the father of the state, so I allocated...
Well, that was right there a problem.
Yeah. So you might want to move on.
Do you want to move on or do you want to work through it with me? What do you want them to do? Give it up or work through it? All right. They're all behind you. They're supporting you. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. How do we determine the amount of the estate that we use as the figure before we start computing the pre-terminated child share? There are two possible ways. One is...
Not given to the pre-terminated child's other parent.
How much of the estate, remember the problem is $75,000 to wife, $25,000 to brother. Nothing to the kids. How much is not left to the pre-terminated child's other parent? All of it, right? Because that $75,000 to W, that's not the pre-terminated child's other parent. So that amount we use, and we also have to use the $25,000 going to brother. Remember, the other way you've determined the amount you start with is the amount left to children. We know that doesn't work in this scenario because nothing was left to any children. So if nothing is left to a kid, the next way we go is how much is left to someone other than the pre-terminated child's other parent. And in this case, it's the entire estate, right? Which we have determined is $100,000. With that in mind, how much would the pre-terminated child get? No? What do you think? What were you going to say? Sure. Why do you say a quarter? You're right. Correct, because at this point, it's simply the share of the pre-terminated child is the share the pre-terminated child would have received by intestacy if there had been no surviving spouse, which in this case is simple. Four kids into $100,000 means that PC gets $25,000. Now you have to figure out where it comes from. Did anybody figure that out?
It comes from the two people that...
Right.
Yeah, so reduced proportionally.
Can you do that?
Isn't it, so since you're taking a quarter from them, you have to reduce their share by about the same?
Proportion?
Yeah.
So you got to reduce their shares by 25%, or they each end up then getting 75% of what they were going to get, which is the same as reducing it by a quarter. Did you do the math?
No.
Now, this math is way harder, because I told you on the exam, although you can bring a calculator, you don't need it. This, I would say, you would need a calculator to do this math. I mean, this is a little hard to do by hand in your head. Anybody do the math? How much does W get? Yes?
W gets 36,250.
How many?
36,250.
36? Now, I think your three is, you wrote your three funny. Yeah.
Wait, no.
Hold it. Anybody else? Calculator got it? Yes.
This is the wife gets 56,250.
Yes. Wife gets 56,000. I think you just wrote the number. Yeah, five looks like three sometimes. I'm helping you out here. Say, that's right. All right. $56,250, and the brother gets?
$18,750.
And the brother gets $18,750. Like I said, this math is harder than anything on the exam, because I'm not going to give you any kind of hard numbers like that. But when you're working and doing a practice problem, you can have a calculator, you can do it. All right. If you can do this one, you can do anything I'll ever give you. Anybody have any questions? Thank you very much for volunteering. You're a brave man. All right. Anything else? All right. Now, I gave you a practice essay question taken directly from a prior midterm in this class. So at one time, this was one of the questions. This is highly representative of the questions I just wrote yesterday. It is about the same length. It is about the same difficulty. So this is a very accurate representation of the type of questions you will see on the exam. So I would assume you worked through it. How many of you read the question and sort of worked through it? Very good. So what we're going to do is I'm going to assume that you work through it, and we're going to work through the issues now. What would be the first thing you would need to do in this type of problem? What's our first thing in the analysis that we would do? You need to determine the validity of the will. Now, what is the key? They're all online.
Okay.
Yes. That's okay. You can. I'm just letting you know I am going to post. Actually, they're already there. They're there, and I'm going to send out an email. So, yeah. I mean, you can. I don't care. You take all the pictures you want. I just didn't want to make you have to worry. Okay. All right. So, validity of will. What is the issue about the validity of the will that you need to talk about? There is one main big issue, and then one very small issue you could talk about. It wouldn't be worth too many points. What's the big one? Look, it even says so there up on the screen. The proxy signature, right? Is the proxy signature by Della of Adrian's name sufficient?
Yes.
And the answer is yes. Why?
In presence by direction.
Does it matter that he physically could sign, that he is not mentally or physically disabled? That does not matter. By direction, in presence is all that you need, so that will work. If you were going to stretch for an issue, what might be one you put in there? Now, we're coming up to that later. Just about validity of will. What would be one of this fact pattern? It's kind of stretchy, but it's there. Very minor. Who said capacity? Talk about it. Right. Do you think that really would affect his capacity? No. But you could get a couple of little points by mentioning that. But it's a very weak argument. What you don't want to do is spend a page going through all the requirements of a valid will that aren't at issue. Remember, your goal is not to give me all the law you need, but to spot the issues. The big issue is that proxy signature. And maybe a capacity issue because of the OCD, but there was no facts in the problem that let you would think he didn't know he was making a will or was disposing of his property or that he didn't know who his family members were or what he owned. Right? There was nothing pointing to any of the elements of capacity, but you could mention it because some disgruntled person probably would if they were contesting the will. All right, so that's validity of will. Any questions? Now, what everybody's been trying to say is, hey, corporation by reference. All right, so let's take a look. Oh, it doesn't like to do that. We got better tech. All right. The validity of the bequests at my death document. In this issue, determining whether or not it's valid, there are three sub-issues, three legal theories that you would have needed to discuss to get full credit. If those of you who worked out the question ahead of time, if you talked about all three of those, you are rolling good. You can pretty much say that on that issue, three is an A, two is a B, one is a C. Okay? Based upon, you know, if you were just examining that one particular issue. All right. You could try to claim that it's a holographic will. The only way that it could be holographic will is what? If it were signed and met the requirements of intent and all of that, which we don't know, but you could say one hope would be that he signed it, and then we could make it a holographic codicil. That's a possibility. What about incorporation by reference? Would that work? Could that have been incorporated by reference? No, why not? Correct. Not in existence at date of will execution. Remember, for something to be incorporated by reference, it must be in existence as of date of will execution. This document clearly wasn't. He created it later. The problem said he spent a year or something working on it. So it cannot be incorporated by reference. Our third possibility is that it's a fact of independent significance. Is that possible? Would that work here? Is it? What do you think? Why not? Correct. That piece of paper cannot be deemed a fact of independent significance because its only purpose for existing was to dispose of property at death. So it has no legal reason apart from at death distribution of property. Therefore, it would need the requirements of a valid will, which then cycles us back to, could it be a holographic will if he signed it? I mean, that sort of gets us back to issue number one again. Anybody have any questions with regard to this? Speak up. Go ahead.
Can you have, I guess maybe you could, a holographic codicil for an attested will?
Absolutely. Okay. No problem at all. Because both documents would be valid, we don't have to worry about whether they're holographic or attested. The only time it matters if we're trying to bootstrap an invalid will. Then if we're trying to bootstrap an invalid attested will, then we need a valid attested codicil. Because if it's a holographic codicil, we destroy its holographic character by the incorporation.
Okay.
Anything else? Sure, go ahead, please.
In the analysis of the holographic will, what's sufficient there? Can you just say the facts don't indicate that it's signed?
Yeah. No. You could say, to be holographic in Texas, it doesn't need witnesses if it's all in his own handwriting and signed. The problem tells you he hand wrote it. We have no idea if he signed it. Don't have the facts, and we're out of here. That's good enough. Anything else? All right, the next thing you might want to talk about then is the gifts that Natalie would receive. Natalie's gifts. Now, since we determined the will was valid, we can carry out the terms of the will. Because the will said, I leave all my real property to Natalie. So that's simple. Natalie will receive the apartment building in Dallas, because that's his separate property. He's leaving all his property to her. So she gets the apartment building in Dallas, and she'll also get half of the cactus farm in Muleshoe. Why does she only inherit half? It's community, meaning she already owns half. If you said she receives the entire thing under the will, that wouldn't be so good, because that sounds like she's getting it all. She ends up owning it all. That's a true statement. But she's only receiving under the will his half, because she already owns half. Do you see the difference there? So she receives all of the apartment building under the will, because that was his separate. But she only receives half of the cactus farm, because she already owns half of the cactus farm. She does end up owning all of it. Just be sure the way you phrase it on the exam makes it clear that you know what you're saying. Then we find out, however, though, that the will doesn't say what to do with the rest of the property. So we end up out with a partial intestacy situation. So now we have to figure out the issues with regard to intestacy. Well, we look to see Julia. Julia, she was an adopted child when she was 10. And we know that if you're adopted, you become part of the family. So there is really no, there's not much to say there. She's adopted, so she's going to be treated as a biological child. There is no real issue here other than to recognize that adopted children are treated as the biological children, and therefore an adopted child will be an heir of the intestate. But what about this birthday gift to her? I mean, he said that that he was giving her $100,000. And at the same time that she gave her that money, he said to Natalie, "This is an advancement. Happy birthday." And I'll even assume that it's all recorded and posted on YouTube. Or that weird one. Could you do that in, 6 seconds? Is that how long you get in Vine? Do you guys do that? Are you Vine people? A more undergraduate type thing? High school? No. What?
I think most of us watch it, just not do it.
Okay. Pretty weird. All right. Look, if I know what it's all about, you guys should know. Yes? How many don't know what a Vine thingy is? Oh, good. That's good. I feel good. All right. Now, they're 6 second, they're like visual tweets. They're 6 second videos that repeat. When you watch them, you constantly see the same 6 seconds over and over again. Yeah, I see no logic for doing it, but what do I know? All right. So, is that gift an advancement? No. Why not? Not in writing, right? Got to be in writing. If it's not in writing, it doesn't work. So no matter what evidence you have, if you don't have a writing signed either by Adrian saying the gift is an advancement, or Natalie acknowledging it, Natalie acknowledging his advancement, it won't work. So now we basically end up with that gift not being considered at all an advancement of her share. So now we have to look at, where do we get? There. Wait, no, stay there. All right. We already did that one. Five. There. So now we have to look at the surviving spouse's share. Now, Natalie is going to inherit 1/3 of Adrian's separate funds, because that's, you know, personal property. So you get 1/3, and that is $100,000. And with regard to the community, she's not inheriting any of the community, right? None of the community. Why? Because Adrian had a child that is not hers. A child that is not that of the surviving spouse. That was Kevin, according to the facts of the problem. So Natalie inherits none of his share of the community funds. Of course, she keeps her half. She keeps her $100,000. She keeps her half, because it's her half of the community. But because there is a child that he has that is not also her descendant, that's Kevin, then the community then she does not inherit any of his community. Instead, it's going to be divided among the two children. There we go. So, with regard to each of the children, Kevin and Julia will divide the remaining two-thirds of the separate property, so each receives $100,000. Notice how nice and easy the math works out. That's the way it works out in real problems. Okay? So they each get $100,000, and with the community, his share was $100,000. There are two kids, so each of them receive $50,000. One of the biggest mistakes when this question was given on the exam was that people went through all sorts of contorted distributions of separate real property because they thought, oh, there's separate real property. There is. But guess what? There was a will that took care of that. Right? The problem, people were making this problem real difficult. They were distributing all the separate property with life estates and remainders and all of that. I'd say 25% of the people distributed separate real property in this problem, not realizing that they'd already given away, that he had already successfully given away all of the separate real property with the valid will. That makes sense? How you could, you know, in a hurry, start doing that? And I didn't count off any credit, but you sure wasted a lot of time when that was on the exam. So that is, like I said, an accurate example of what a essay question will look like that you will be confronted with on the exam. Anybody have any questions? All right. It is 2 minutes after four. I didn't mean to keep you 2 minutes late. I'll stick around as long as anybody has any individual questions that they would like to talk with me about. Few snacks are left. Don't let me bring them home. And I'll see you all tomorrow morning.